We'd like to welcome you to another episode of Missing Pages of History. That's right. This is Missing Pages of History, and today we're going to fill in some of our missing pages. And the way we're going to do this today is we have two guests who will be speaking from their practical experiences of being organizers in their community and their life experiences. And we'd like them to fill in their page as it relates to the history of the struggling masses of African people throughout the world. Missing Pages of History, we have with us today, we'd like to welcome our brother Stuart Bobby, who is a organizer and a worker out of the area of Durham, Raleigh, North Carolina. And we have with our sister Empress Chai, who is also is an organizer out of the community of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, USA. We'd like to welcome both of y'all to Missing Pages. And before we get started, of course, I know our listeners would like to know, who are you? Who are you, Brother Stuart, and who are you, Sister Empress? We start with Brother Stuart. Give us just a little bit of background of who you are, Brother Stuart.
Yeah, sorry about that, Lee. I'm just a brother born in D.C., grew up in North Carolina, and lived in North Carolina most of my life. Was activist as a teenager, and once going to college, I met up with other activists and organizers in the All African People's Revolutionary Party and joined the AAPRP back in 1981. And so we've been working to try to educate and organize Africans around the world since then. Involved in different activities and programs. So recently I had the opportunity to move to Zania, South Africa. That opportunity, and I've been there for the last year and a half or so.
Okay, Sister Empress.
Yes, and greetings, brothers, and those who are listening, and thank you for having us on the program for today. As you indicated, my name is actually Sister Empress Fale Chionesu, and I am called Empress Chi because Chionesu, and for some that's sometimes difficult to pronunciate, so we shorten it for folks. Yes, I am an organizer, as you indicated, Brother Lee, but I think it's important to point out in the context of history that I'm also the founder and the originator of the Million Women March. So, yes, while I am a community organizer, I have to also indicate that I am a strategist and a technician, because for sisters, it's so important that our roles be, if not redefined, certainly made clearer. And it's important today, especially for young sisters, to know that there are sisters in the midst today, in their midst, and in our people's midst, in our communities, who are mothers, daughters, of course, professionals, but also when it comes to struggle, when it comes to liberation of our people, we also have major roles, and in some cases, it is not just as indicated an organizer. As with Mother Harriet Tubman, it was not just an activist or an organizer. It was a military mind that went into effect and produced what it produced in bringing our people into a form of freedom. So, again, based on the fact that we are talking about history, it is so important that we put it in the proper context. The Million Women March is the largest gathering in the world of any women anywhere ever. So we're not just talking about Black history, African history. We're not just talking about women's history. We're talking about world history. And I have to really emphasize that because we're losing the importance of our history. Our own scholars and historians and enthusiasts are not documenting our own history, as in the case with the Million Women March. To have something that had no corporate sponsoring, no major benefactors, no figureheads, that was organized from the grassroots up, it's really important to know how phenomenal that really was and is. And as we proceed, I'll go further on in indicating why the history of the upcoming reunion is so important.
And Sister Cha, you're absolutely correct. You are the fan of Karina of the Million World March, and that's one of the things we would like to discuss with you about, is what's happening with that and where we're going with it. And we would definitely want you to share some information on where are you taking it at this point in time. But before we do that, I'd like to start with my brother, Brother Stewart, who has done something that's very unique in terms of what very few us Africans who's born in this country get a chance to do, and that is to travel outside of the country. And to even particularly have a chance to go back home to the motherland. So we are very fascinated. Brother Stewart, if you could just give us a general overview on what was it like when you first arrived in Zambia, South Africa? And can you talk about some of the objective conditions that you view, that you had a chance to deal with as an African born in the U.S. going back to Zambia, South Africa?
Yeah, I'll address that. Let me just do about backing up just a little bit because I wanted people to know that there's a lot of Africans that go to the continent, but the capacity in which we go in a lot of times under the auspices of either some foreign government or some foreign military. So there's a lot of us that go to Africa. We just don't go independently of these colonial agents or colonial governments that go in with other interests in helping to build Africa. And just like to mention that the first time I've had the chance to go to Africa was actually back in 1987 when this was a year after the United States bombed Libya. And so the international community, along with the Libyan people, the AAPRP, and several other organizations had put together a delegation of militants from the United States to go to Libya to protest that bombing. So that was actually my first chance to go to the continent. And that was a very educational experience then. And I decided back then I wanted to try to, you know, do more travel. So we've had people who've gone back and forth on the different occasions. And myself, I was just fortunate enough to be able to move there and live in Tanzania for the last year and a half. So to jump forward a little bit, you know, Zania was supposedly, I guess you can say liberated, but partially liberated, or got political independence back in 94. And, you know, up until that point, you know, we had been active in helping to put the Zanian struggle on the, you know, pages of history in terms of our work here in the United States. We work with various organizations in Tanzania, so I was interested in going there to just do some work and see how things have progressed since that time. I can say that it is a very dynamic country, and it's very hard to categorize completely exactly what's going on, but there's some forward motion and there's some backward motion, I believe, that I would say in the country. There's a lot of things that I had expected. One of the things I didn't expect, though, was, you know, since being there, and I told Lee earlier, going into Zania at this point, to me, was almost like stepping back in time, maybe 50 or 60 years in the United States. And the reason I say that is that the political climate in the country, even though it's, you know, the politics are dominated by organizations like the ANC and various other groups that have split off since then, you find the social characteristics of the people's lives are pretty much looks almost like the 1950s and 1960s here in the United States in terms of race relations. Even today, brothers and sisters, they go around and they greet people who are either white or look like they have money. They greet them as boss, sir. And it's a cultural thing that's it's very difficult to get used to. you know, seeing that, you know, the kind of struggle we've had to go through here. And there are some areas, the place where I live, like I said, I haven't been all over the country, but the place where I live is probably indicative of the kind of culture that I'm experiencing because, as people know, South Africa was ruled by minority white rule over 100 years, and they have a language called Afrikaans. And in the main province, which is Gauteng province, where Johannesburg and Pretoria sits, Pretoria is the capital of the country. Johannesburg is one of the main business centers of the country. And so in this province, Afrikaans is the dominant language. And so you have a very significant presence and socially, politically, and economically of the minority of the population of the country, very, very prominent in this area. So it's really difficult to get used to in terms of going there and watching, I don't know if anybody has seen the movie The Help. You watch the maids and the gardeners come into the neighborhoods early in the morning, riding from buses across town and from the townships. And they arrive early in the morning. You see them walking down the streets to go to the houses where they work. And then, you know, you see them again walking away from the neighborhoods in the afternoon to catch the buses to go back to the townships. So it was real difficult to just to watch this and look at it and see and realize that this is, you know, 2012. And I'm looking at a scene that looks like it's out of the 1950s. Here in the United States, so it was real difficult to try to adjust to that. So I'm just saying those things to say that while the politics in the country has changed somewhat, my perception is that the reality of people's lives has not really changed very much from what they were before apartheid was formally abolished. So that's just my first impression.
How was you perceived being African? You were born in the United States and going back to Azania, South Africa. Did they see you as one of them, or did they see you as an outsider? What can we expect in terms of the human interaction with Africans born here going back to that region of at home?
Kind of a multi-sided issue because, you know, one of the things, because race is such a predominant factor in the politics of the country, a lot of it depends on how they perceive you. You know, the country was dominated with racial politics pretty much like the United States were. So they divided people up into groups. You had the Afrikaner, the whites, and then you had the colors who were of, you know, mixed background of African, the various African ethnic groups there, and some of the white. And then you have the various ethnic backgrounds. There's 11, at least 11 different ethnic groups in South Africa. So someone coming from outside the country, first of all, you know, just my perception, people see, just like we do here, how people dress, how they present themselves in terms of their hair and their clothing, makeup, hairstyle, you know, all those different kind of things, how you walk, and, of course, the way you talk. So a lot of the relationship is built on perception. And from my experience, I think that a lot of it's, like I said, because of its racial politics and its the economics that dominates how people relate to each other, even just socially. Anybody that is perceived to have some money is automatically addressed as sir or ma'am, Mrs., whereas, you know, they may address each other differently. So I think the, you know, they look at you and can perceive your being from the outside very quickly. Now, I think the challenge that we have, that's not necessarily good or bad in terms of how they perceive things. But I think the challenge that we have is to recognize that because of the depressed state that they currently live in, it's very easy to be exploited for one reason or another. You know, you have some people that, for example, that may come from the outside and they expect to have money. There are a lot of people, because of their conditions, they learn how to hustle and they try to take advantage of outsiders. So you get people who are locally there, they try to hustle you for money if they think you have it. Likewise, you have people that come from the outside that try to hustle local people to do things for money. So there's a tension that I think that builds over time. In South Africa, there's actually a significant presence of Africans born in the United States who are there. I didn't actually get to meet up with too many of them, but they're actually there. I don't know if you all, there was a program maybe a couple of years ago on TV that I think on one of the cable channels talking about the Africans born in the States who resettled in South Africa and they're doing well in business and such. So I think that a lot of the relationship that we may have with them is built on a lot of these expectations and premises. So the challenge we have is people trying to help build the countries and help building the relationship is to break through some of those perceptions that help keep us apart. So one of the objectives I have, for example, is rather than going around and allowing myself to be called sir, or boss, as a lot of them refer, is to actually engage local people and explain to them that that I was not anybody's boss. I'm not a sir. Tried to get them to address me by my first name, things like that. So that was a challenge, and it's still an ongoing challenge in terms of, how to relate to people. There were all these stories of the crime and the violence that takes place in South Africa, and it does happen. I think I've been fortunate that I've experienced just a very small amount of that and haven't really been affected too much, but it's there. Pretty much the same way that Africans that come to the United States, they a lot of times are being told, don't go into certain black neighborhoods and such. I got the same kind of advice in terms of where to live and where to go to mingle with people and those kinds of things. And I'm an African that's fair complexion. They approach me more like I'm either a colored or, a white person in South Africa, not knowing anything different.
Okay.
So I have to address those questions as well.
Okay, I'm going to start right there, Brother Stewart. For our audience, what we're doing today, we basically have two guests with us, Stewart, that you were just listening to. He's describing his realities of going back home to Tanzania, South Africa. And he's been on that for a year and a half now. And we're trying to fill some of these missing pages as we deal with the realities of our people. Right now, what we'd like to do, we have another very special person on our phone today. Is Sister Chai, Empress Chai. She is a convener and a founder of the Billion Women March. And I think that I know there's a very significant event coming up later on this year as relates to the longevity of this institution, the Million Women March and the Million Women Movement. And what we would like to do at this point in time, Sister Empress, is can you give us a update on what's happening with the Million Women Movement and where we're going from here as relates to this
movement? Absolutely. And again, thank you, Brother Lee. It's really a very diverse and a very kind of multifaceted thing that's happening with the Million Women March, and now its evolution into an actual movement, which was always the plan. It was never to just have a day event. That was just a launching point, and it was to begin a process. And anyone knows when you're building something, you have to start somewhere. And certainly our objective was then and is now develop a global movement for women and girls of African descent, the diaspora. It has taken us 15 years to do that, but at the same time, that's a period in time when, in fact, able to move forward in a certain kind of manner. And I recently returned or came back from the Republic of Benin, and at that time we began to establish our first phase of developing a sisterhood, an African women's sisterhood, which will be happening throughout the diaspora in the next 5 years. And our objective is to formulate a progressive Pan-African Women's Federation. I've been in the UN now for 3 years, and what we found is our sisters globally, especially the motherland, their relationship to really conscientious African women in North America is very limited, is minimum. They tend to engage more with sisters who are not necessarily connected to our grassroots communities. And so the objectives for the Men and Women Movement was to have that kind of holistic approach so that, you know, we wear so many hats, but at the same time, we need to operate from all of them or as many as possible, and that's our approach. We function in a way that represents, again, a more of a 360 kind of interaction. And so when, for example, I'm here in Philadelphia, our national headquarters is been in Philadelphia from its conception and has remained as such. One of the things that the reunion, as you indicated, Brother Lee, will do is not only, again, bring sisters together from all walks of life, but now connecting those dots globally. So we will be bringing to our reunion, and we call it Sweet 16, because, you know, most folks have some connection with understanding that the number 16, you know, represents a kind of a start of maturity or the next level of maturity. And so that's where we're at with our move. 16 years, we are now ready to move to that next level. And in doing so, to build the types of institutions that is necessary for today, for example, within our next plan or our five-year action plan, we plan to build a school for girls. We also have on the table a holistic health center, community-based, that will provide affordable health care, but from a more holistic, a more alternative perspective. We'll also provide training. So these are some of the things within the next couple of years that is mandated, and to do it by raising our own funds, not by getting grants and, connecting or... with the Men and Women March.
Okay, that's excellent. Let me ask you, Sister Shai, in terms of, I remember earlier you emphasized the point that you concentrated around women, issues and problems affecting women. Can you give me some general conditions of what's going on with the plight of the African women today as it relates to various forms of issues and problems they're confronting with at the present time?
Well, Brother, we've been doing some serious research over these past years, particularly as it pertains to what I call gender violations. And that is not just domestic violence, as other people tend to call it. In this day and age, it's not just domestic. It is straight-up violations of our women and girls. Here in Philadelphia, we had an incident where a sister, 23 years old, was jumped by three males and beaten to death, and people stood around and watched. And so we have tracked these kinds of cases all over the country, but they get very little exposure and certainly very little attention or addressment. So we realized we had to formulate something that would be in place ongoingly, so I developed something called the Black Women's Defense League. The same thing as it pertains to incarceration. Presently, the largest rate of incarceration now is black women, is African women in the United States. And the projection for juveniles is now, you would not believe what the projection is for young girls to be in some kind of law enforcement system, you see. So we again developed some approaches, some projects to begin to deter and to deal with what we know is coming down the pike, as we did in 97 when they started cutting programs. We knew that the crack cocaine epidemic, while it devastated all of our communities, it had a particular impact on our sisters, you see. For the first time that we can recall or that we can document, you never had African women selling your children under no circumstances, even under the heroin epidemic. But under the crack cocaine epidemic, a lot of things changed. from the mental, the spiritual, but also the biological. So we had a situation like we had never had before, and we're presently dealing with that situation now. So we know that there are several areas, the increase of rape, both in the United States and in Africa, needless to say, has risen in such a way that if we do not address it realistically, we're going to look at some generations coming in that will have some, you know, horrific mindsets and so forth. So these are some of the areas that we have presently designed some very specific things. We have a project called Saving Our Daughters, which is geared to young girls from 7 to 17. We do not call our program or our projects mentoring. We call them sistering. And so we approach these things with a conscientious African frame of reference so that we can continue to provide the nurturing along with the traditions and the histories of our people so that, you know, we really can make that type of difference. So this October, there will be a very large gathering in commemoration of our 16th year anniversary of the largest gathering in the world, but also the launching now of a global movement. Again, I recently returned from the Republic of Benin and began to establish our sisterhood there. I was granted citizenship. And so, while I'm going to always stay in the U.S. because I feel committed to deal with the struggle here, there's also the reality of connecting the dots with our sisters worldwide. And in as such, we will be holding the first of three summits in the next 5 years. There will be three summits that will focus on the human rights issues of Africans throughout the diaspora. The Republic of Benin has agreed to host that first summit in December of this year. It'll be right around the time of International Human Rights Day. And we will look very closely at the issues of human rights as pertains to our people worldwide. And on the U.S. side, of course, we'll be bringing in the issue of our political prisoners. And so we can share that information very clearly and concretely with the international world of our people in terms of bringing that plight of Mumia Abu-Jamal and Tutankhamun Shakur and Sunyata Kohli. We want to make certain that the world community hears from us the plight of those brothers, particularly brothers who are incarcerated for their political views, activities, and so forth. So we will introduce also reparations.
Let me stop you right there, Sister Empress, and we're down to about 3 minutes. Time goes by so quickly. I would like to take maybe one or two quick phone calls. Any kind of comments or question may have for our guests, we can ask our participants to, ask the question within 30 seconds so they can at least give you a proper response. We're going to caller 0240. Caller 0240.
240.
Welcome to Mr. Page of History. Question or comment, please.
Question or comment, please. Thank you, Lee. I was listening, and I'm telling you, I wish this could continue because I would like to know more about what Sister Empress was talking about and also the brother. Is the possibility that he could come on again and continue?
We can schedule a continuation for next week.
Next week,
hopefully, we'll be at the same time, same place. But I'm not quite sure about Brother Stu. I think he'd be leaving the country. So we don't see him work something out. It's possible.
Okay, very good. Because this is information that needs to be heard worldwide. And you're on a system where you can reach our people from right where you are.
We got one more caller, real quickly, caller. Caller 8488. Question or comment, please. 8488. Caller, your question or comment, please. Real quickly, please.
Hi, peace. This is Mikhail, Philadelphia. How's everybody doing?
All right, brother.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear these kind of comments coming over the airwaves, and Missing Pages of History is definitely the right vehicle for this. Whenever we can have these two guests come back and contribute some more, I have a million questions to ask myself, whether it's citizenship and dual citizenship in Africa or what's going on with the Million Woman March, I have a lot more questions. So I'm hoping that we can get further updates on all these issues.
Okay, for those who would like to contact us, we ask you to email us at missingpagesofhistory1@yahoo.com, or you can contact us at 804. I have a hard time saying my number. It's 804-519-0357. We are building memberships. We need our people to come forward. We're helping our people to build communities. And for our guests, what we would like to do at this point in time, for our guests, we would like for y'all to just give us a closing. Or how can the people support your work? Does the Empress start with you?
Okay, sure. Well, first of all, please feel free to contact us, our office, via email or telephone, especially the sister that called in. Please give us a call at any time, sister. NationalMWM@AOL.com. Again, national, spelled out, MWM, all one word, @AOL.com. Our telephone number is area code 267-636-3802. We now have a large number of variety of memberships available for our sisters and brothers as well. We need volunteers and folk who want to help coordinate in their city, in their state, in their community to come to the reunion. We're going to declare October the whole month as African, well, actually it's Black Women's because we're focusing on the U.S., so it's we call it Black Women's Appreciation and Awareness Month. We're taking a whole month to do things with and for our sisters for October. But also at the reunion, we're going to announce the Year of the Black Girl starting in October of 2013 through 2014. So we want young sisters to especially join us. Many of them have never experienced anything like that, and they deserve to have and to see that type of gathering, that type of camaraderie. So, again, we need the support of our people, both in financially and contributions, but also in in-kind services and any other way that you want to help. We have a campaign called One in a Million, meaning you can support us by contributing or donating from $1 to $1 million, and you will be one of our support members with, again, the amount of $1 up. And so please feel free, again, to contact us at nationalmwm@aol.com or 267-636-3802.
Also, sister, you have a program, Radio Show Yourself, that comes on the weekend. Can you share with the people how can they maybe tune in and hear some of your programs?
Yes.
Excellent program.
We come on every Saturday night, 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. We've been off now for 5 years straight. And tonight we will have a brother on, a brother who's a professor at one of the universities in Delaware, who has done an investigation on the recent lynchings. Two lynchings have occurred in the past few months in Dover, Delaware. And now, as this brother has done the investigation, they have fired him and now and arrested him for allegedly disorderly conduct because they had a rally on campus. So he will be on tonight. And Sister Pam Africa and myself will be going to support him this Tuesday to address the issue of how they have tried to set him up and the issue of the lynching. So you can tune in at 10:30 tonight, www.blogtalkradio.com/EmpressChi, or you can hear it on your telephone via podcast at 646-652-2232. Again, 646-652-2232.
And for Brother Stewart, before you leave, there is one question I got to get you to answer to share with our people. And a question around contrasting this reality of given the fact that Azania, South Africa, politically has been able to elect a so-called African president. And here today in the United States, you have a so-called African president. How has it changed the economic political status of our people in the West in these countries, in the country of Azania, South Africa? Can you contrast the two and talk a little bit about those realities, how they're very similar or maybe differ?
Yeah, I find it very interesting how I think they on a parallel path in terms of how Africans have related to the structures of power in both countries. As we know here in the United States, we went through a process of fighting for human and civil rights, only for that struggle to be pretty much co-opted by the agents of intelligence agencies, FBI and such, culminating, not really culminating, but now leading us to an era where we have an African as a president and a similar situation in South Africa. My personal perception, like I said, this is leading to a situation where the economic reality of the majority of Africans in South Africa, I don't think has changed very much. There is, however, a significant middle class and upper class population of Africans that I think as a result of the negotiations and the struggle after ending apartheid, where there's a few Africans who have become billionaires in South Africa since apartheid has ended, and they have an African leader today. And it's my opinion, my experience is that they are basically working for the interest of those elites, just like the Africans, part of the elite here, working for the elites here in this country. There have been, I told earlier that almost the whole time I was in South Africa, in Tanzania, there's almost no month that has gone by where there has not been protests of some sort, whether it's over the question of having running water, having electricity, wages, working conditions throughout the country. So that's almost a constant state of protest throughout the country each month. So, and the protests are becoming more and more vigilant, as we've seen in the last August, where the miners and the Marikana area went on strike, and the police, the state government cracked down and actually massacred about 44 miners. And then the police went through to set up the scene as though these miners were perpetrators of an attack on the police force, and the police were responding in self-defense when it became evident later on during investigations that that was not the case. So we have a lot of similarities in terms of how people are suffering in both countries. We know, like the sister was just talking about, people still getting lynched here. There are people there in South Africa, our brothers and sisters, still being cut down not by the state government. There's a lot of internal strife among different peoples there as well. Some of it, I believe, fomented by the whole notions of just wanting to divide and rule. I mean, there's so many contradictions in South Africa that it's more than we can just talk about on this program right now. But my perception is that there's not a lot of difference in terms of where people stand economically, except for the fact that in South Africa today there's a significant maybe upper middle class to elite class of Africans who I believe are working with the interests of foreign international enterprises to maintain the status quo and take the country in a direction that does not benefit the majority of the people.
Okay, in closing, I'd like to just let our audience know that y'all listen to Missing Pages of History. Our cast tonight was Sister Empress Chai, who is the convener and founder of the Million Woman March and Movement. You also will listen to our brother Stuart Bobby, who has been able to leave and go to Tanzania, South Africa for the last year and a half and live there. He was just sharing some of his views and perspective on the realities back home. And both of them have chosen today to share, fill in some of our missing pages of history based upon their experiences. And we'd like to thank y'all for your contribution to the history of our people. And we'd like to share with our audience until next time. You can always reach Missing Pages of History by emailing us at missingpagesofhistory1@yahoo.com, or you can call us at 804-519-0357. Our motto is building strong communities through communication. This is the whole purpose of having this particular educational tool that we call Blog Talk Radio. on the Missing Pages of History so we can give people information so they can think. Until next time, we'd like to thank you. We'd like to thank our guests. And one more time, Sister Empress, a number where they can reach you again.
Yes, indeed. NationalMWM at AOL.com or 267-636-3802.
And Brother Stewart, you did mention a little bit, did mention that you also organized for organization, the African People Revolutionary Party, GC, which is a political organization within African communities. I understand it's a Pan-African organization. Can you speak quickly a little bit about it and give a number so that people can reach out?
Okay, yeah. Unfortunately, I don't have the number, but we do have a website for the All African People's Revolutionary Party, GC, which stands for Guinea-Conakry. The website is www.a-aprp-gc.org, and you can find more information about the organization at that website, contact numbers, and other information, educational material on that website that tells you more about the organization and the work that's being done. Our task is to organize and educate the mass of African people throughout the world to build one unified socialist Africa that will lead us towards the path of liberation and unification for all African people around the world.
Okay, as your host, Brother Lee, on behalf of Mr. Pages of History, to my guests, my audience, we thank you for allowing us to have this program to come to your homes today. Until next time, we'd like to encourage you to remember, without information you cannot think, and without organization you cannot think clearly. Join some organization that will help make your community and the future a brighter one for your people and all humanity. Until next time, we thank you.